Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Actually Rally, episode 4, season 9. We missed you last week. Did you miss us? I hope you did. Right, it's a busy show this week, and it's a busy show because there's only two of us, unfortunately, due to schedules and everything else, and the man of mystery that is Ryan Champion. He isn't with us this week. He is away somewhere. I don't even know where he is. It's proper Ryan Champion territory, this. I've got no idea where he is this week. So it's just me, and not even on my left or my right, but right in front of me this week is Jack Bennion. Hello, Jack Bennion.
Hello, Tony Simpson, and hello, absent Ryan Champion, when he listens back to the podcast.
Do you think he does?
Yeah, definitely. He's a proper yeah. Bobblehead, isn't he?
Do you know what was quite funny? Because last Wednesday, when normally we record the podcast, I was actually sat in his local with him, which was quite bizarre.
That must have been bizarre.
And we didn't talk a lot of rallying for a change, which is unlike us. I think we did about 20 minutes of intense rally chat, and then we tried to kind of police ourselves of not getting too carried away. But one thing we did speculate on, and one thing that was kind of confirmed, there was a little picture put up by a lovely lady who is normally the service area coordinator on the Pirelli rally, and Heather Garsild. And she also, I think she works M Sport now, I'm not entirely sure, but she put a nice picture of her and Tony Gardemeister up, and that kind of created a little bit of a frenzy of, what are you doing with Tony Gardemeister? And people speculated, was Cali there? And of course, then there's a story, page 12 this week of MN, all is revealed, Jack Bennion.
Absolutely, as just how MN likes it, doing the revealing and not doing any chasing. Yeah, Cali Robin-Pair is apparently close to a deal with M Sport for his Rally GB entry later in the year, and also for a mixed British Rally Championship and WRC2 campaign next year. So we've got some quotes from Timo Jocchi, who says the deal's very close and it's most likely, and words like this. So not quite a signed deal yet, but plenty of people talking this deal up, including Malcolm Wilson himself, who went down into the Forest Complex to have a watch of Cali and see what it was all about. And there's also I thought actually a fantastic sidebar by David Evans from Stuart Larden on sitting with Cali, and actually some proper sort of reaction from someone who was sat in a car with Cali, because we hear all these people, don't we, talking about how good Cali is and referring to him as the Max Verstappen of rallying and all this rubbish, but we don't actually get that sort of drive and insight about Cali, do we really, in the UK? But it's really nice to have this sidebar from Stuart to talk about how good Cali was, and I'm not going to reveal anything from that. I'm going to make you buy the paper, so go and buy it and have a read of that.
Well, you can go online, of course, now, Jack Bennion.
Absolutely, you can. Yeah, you can. Yeah,
you can do it on, and I say Stuart, he's actually been on the programme. I'll tell you what, it's quite interesting with regards to his comments, of course. Where I'll reveal this a little bit. Right, Stuart makes reference to the note that he wrote for Greystoke. We've all been around Greystoke. We know what Greystoke's like and everything else, and Stuart's probably been around there many times, but he wrote some notes obviously for Cali. Cali uses a descriptive note system, which I find fascinating, because a lot of people went to numbers to speed up the process. Now we're talking about a very, very fast young man using a descriptive note system. Now I realize, Jack Bennion, you and I would have a great conversation with Ryan Champion if he was here about pace notes, but he's not, so it'll just be me and you. I use a descriptive note system. I'm not entirely comfortable saying this because I'm not comparing myself to Cali, far from it. But recently I felt that descriptive notes, even for me, were actually quite restrictive, and I find it almost refreshing to see that this young man is using that particular system. And I'm surprised, because a lot of the Finns use the direction and then the number. Now, certainly I know Jari Matti used to use that system, and certainly Mika Hirvonen used that system. And it comes from the fact that originally they were coached by Pentti Iriccola, and Pentti used to have the direction and then number. That's how he used to do his driver coaching. So to see this young man using this note system, I thought was really, really fascinating. And again, a great insight, and more can be read, of course, in the paper or indeed online if you want to go down that road anyway. But speaking of young drivers, story you guys were speculating on with regards to Hyundai obviously having this. Is it a magic 20, Jack? Is it 20 drivers that they're looking to bring in to evaluate?
17.
I was close. Yeah. Obviously,
we'll give you that one.
Yeah, our invites were lost in the post. Maybe the 20 was including me, you and Ryan. But there were 17 drivers, three of which are British, and a couple of them are not entirely comfortable by the looks of things of being quoted on the possibility of going to it, Jack.
Yeah, it's quite a new thing, and I think the interviews are taking part quite recently. So, I think some of the drivers maybe don't want to jeopardise any sort of involvement or, you know, anything like that by saying anything out of turn or anything like that. So, I think maybe just being a bit cautious there, the guys. But yeah, it's Gus Greensmith, who's been doing WRC2 this year and a good friend of the show from last year from his Drive DMAT Trophy campaign. Real breakthrough performance in Finland from him, actually. So if you've not had a look at his results in Finland, go back and have a quick look. Chris Ingram as well, who's leading the ERC under 27 junior rally championship, and Tom Cave, who's been mixing BRC with WRC2, and he scored a WRC2 podium in Finland, so another one to watch there, and he's also driven a Hyundai this year, so yeah, nice to see those three Brits involved.
Have we got any idea who any of the other drivers are? Is there anything being kind of shared by anybody else? Is there any other drivers that we'd look at, you know, from WRC2 or maybe from ERC and go, okay, you know, he could certainly, you know, mix it with the three that you've just mentioned?
There's no one kind of publicised, and the news that Hyundai put out last week by their press release didn't include any names whatsoever. So Gus Greensmith, Chris Ingram and Tom Cave are, you know, ones that we've kind of enclosed. But yeah, I don't know, there's maybe a few there's maybe a few guys. I was surprised to see Ocean Price not linked with it. Maybe that's to do with his DMAC Prize drives or something like that. And he's out in the Fiesta. I'm not sure. I'm just purely speculating there. But yeah, there's a lot of there's 17 and we've only got three there. So you know, there's people like Jari Huttunen, who impressed in Finland, isn't there?
He was outstanding, wasn't he? He was absolutely outstanding. Again, he's come through. He won the Adam Cup, wasn't it? Was that the guy who won the Opel Adam
that's
Cup,
right,
and ended up with the work supported drive this year in ERC alongside Chris Ingram? His times in Finland were absolutely stunning, and to the extent where I had to go back and just double check who he was, because I thought I can't be this guy. You know, he's been driving an R2 car and everything else, and then you look at it and you go, wow. And now, okay, you know, a Finn, you know, and let's be honest with you, Finland this year, of course, we weren't here last week, so we didn't really talk too much about Finland, but Finland this year, it felt like Finland of old, where it's just every class you looked in was just dominated by Finns.
It was a real reversal from what we've seen sort of recently over the past few years, isn't it? You know, we've seen, you know, the Finns kind of heartbreaking. You know, other people have been winning their events. You know, obviously started as Carlos Sainz all those years ago, but Sebastian Loeb and Sebastian Ogier more recently have obviously, won the event. And you know, the classes have also been dominated by people from outside Finland as well. So I think, you know, they were really happy to kind of, in their terms, get their event back, if that makes any sense, you know, claiming it back by winning some of the classes. And really some strong performance in there as well.
I asked this to Elvin before, Jack. Do you think there's a bit of a change in the guard going on in WRC at the moment?
I think I think we've been struggling over the past couple of years to see where those next talents were going to come from, weren't we? And you know, we've had a lot of shakeups in the WRC in terms of manufacturers, and I think Toyota coming in has added another three cars, and that's really kind of opened things up, because we've got drivers coming through now who are actually getting a chance in a WRC car. You know, if you go back 2 years, it'd be really difficult to kind of look at as a Pekka Lappi and think, where's he going to get his chance now in the WRC? Where's he going to go? But because we've had this kind of this rule change and the manufacturers kind of merging into it as well, we've got seats available, and it's creating a lot of competition, which also I think, I'm going off on a tangent now, but I think once you've got competition for those seats, the competition is then driven up because of that, because those guys are fighting for those few seats, and although there are more seats altogether, they are fighting for those seats. So I think the drivers are pushing hard to impress, and I think that drives everyone's standard up.
I couldn't agree more, and I think only now do we look back and you know, people talk about the troubled years where we only had two manufacturers, and I think we have to really, I don't think people do this enough perhaps, is tip our hats to Citroën and Ford, who kept WRC going. If one of them would have went during that period, I really don't know where we'd be now with WRC. I think it would be a very different landscape, and obviously Ford are now no longer directly involved, as it were, as a manufacturer. Obviously it's M Sport, but I think there's so much credit has to be given to to Citroën and Ford for kind of almost propping the championship up for those barring years to really give us what we've got now, Jack.
Absolutely. I'm gonna become Ryan Champion for a second, and you know, if you follow sports cars at all, then you'll know the World Endurance Championships. Really.
Oh no, so, Jack, don't do this to us again.
Struggling at the minute. Yeah, sorry, I'm gonna do it. But it is perfectly relevant to what you're saying, and the fact that you know, most of the manufacturers have now pulled out of the World Endurance Championship of the LMP1 category, the fastest cars, and only Toyota are remaining. So, you know, maybe if Porsche and Audi had just sort of kept it rolling for another year or two, you know, maybe it could have kept going. But, you know, we were lucky that Ford and Citroën kept their involvement, and that the promoters of the championship kept everything rolling. And, you know, now I think we're only getting the benefit of the manufacturers that have backed the championship and a new rules package, which has made the championship exciting again.
I could agree more. And, you know, one thing that has happened is that obviously there's still drivers that are paying, obviously, or have got sponsors that are bringing budget to the table and things like that. But, you know, previously, you know, we had kind of the four works drivers, and then a lot of people who were raising budget elsewhere. You know, you think about the Henning Solbergs, etc., this world, and maybe Manfred Stoll and those types of guys who were kind of on the fringes, but were always managed to find budget. Now, Henning Solberg should write a book, by the way, of how he managed to raise budget repeatedly for those numbers of years, because I think it's phenomenal. I think it's a great story. I think the Solbergs do have this unique ability to be able to create budgets, but there was many other drivers then who were finding budgets to go rallying, you know, Xavier Pons and people like that who managed to find ways. And again, you know, that's not to discredit what they were doing, but certainly all those guys as well. Without them, you know, it would have been a very, very dull landscape. And okay, we had a dominating figure, and you can see where I'm going with this, in Sebastian Loeb, but it kept the championship alive. Now, we've just been talking about, obviously, the change in the guard, but one man who seems to be, is he coming back, Jack? Sebastian Loeb has been driving a modern World Rally car.
I don't know if I can be trusted to talk about this without bias.
I know, don't go giddy.
It's quite difficult.
Yeah, don't go giddy.
I'm going to keep my motorsport news unbiased hat on and talk to you like an adult about this for a few minutes. Or I'm going to try. It's good to see him back in the car, wasn't it? And I thought the video from Citroën was a little bit tame for my liking. It was just an uphill hairpin and downhill hairpin. I think it was just the same one reversed. But yeah, few talks coming out now from Maton saying he'd like to see Loeb in the car on gravel. Do you know what? I'm really going to surprise you now. Are you holding on something, or are you stable?
Yeah,
I don't
stable.
Want you to pull off a chair or anything like that.
Don't.
I don't want him to come back into the WRC next year.
Do you know?
I don't want Seb Loeb to come back.
I'm glad you said that, because that was one chat that Ryan Champion and I had last week, albeit in a pub as opposed to on this podcast, although it did. It's a shame, really. It's really just recorded what we were talking about. But, you know, why damage the legacy? There is nothing to be gained in him coming back, you know, on a, you know, I think Ryan and I got to the point was, let's let him do his home event. That's probably it. Let's just let him do his home event.
Come back each year, let him have a private car and let him go and do the events that he wants to do, just like he does his events in his Peugeot 306 Maxi and all that kind of stuff. But the reason I don't want him to come back is for what we've already talked about on this specific podcast, is that we've got all these brilliant young drivers coming through, and we need somewhere to channel them. And also, you know, we need to, it's not just about getting drivers into the WRC, it's about backing the ones who have just made it. So, you know, we're looking at Craig Breen, for example. Is he going to be at risk because of potentially Seb Loeb coming back into the championship? You know, that for me, that wouldn't be right if Seb came in and took Craig's seat, because Craig has proven that he can score points for the team. He's done a very sensible job in the car. He's not thrown it off stupidly. He scored some really, you know, impressive and strong results, and he deserves to be in the car for next year to prove whether he can win rallies and whether he can keep his development curve going. So if Seb comes back, I mean, yeah, I'll be giddy for a couple of hours, but it will take away one of those 2017 seats, which, as you say quite rightly, he's got nothing to prove and can really only damage his legacy rather than improve it, really, can't he? And, you know, unless he's going to win a 10th title, which, you know, the chances of that are, you know, extremely low, aren't they? So.
No. I think I think you spoke with your head and your heart on that. And that's kind of where Ryan and I got to last week when we were speaking about this, obviously not on the podcast, which I'm just sharing what Ryan and I were discussing. But there is nothing, you know, to be gained. And again, you know, it's to be the detriment of Craig, or, you know, it could be Chris, it could be Andreas, it could be anybody. I think the only thing possibly, and I think Citroën are very, very good at this anyway, Citroën Racing. Obviously, you know, Abu Dhabi want results. I think when Khaled got to stage end, I think he said, you know, they want more. I think they've all admitted that there's work to be done. And obviously they ran Olin suspension for the first time, of course, on Finland as well, which is kind of not discussed so much. But, you know, maybe from a marketing point of view for the sponsors, you know, whether it's Total, of course, who also, you know, support the Rallycross project, they've always supported PSA Group. But there's a little tiny cynical part of me, Jack Benny, in that when the announcement was made, it kind of coincided with the fact that the Peugeot Citroën kind of thing was kind of brought under, you know, the PSA Group Motorsport. I can't quite think of the correct terminology now, but they've kind of brought both motorsport projects together now under one banner. And I think I said it, I think last week to Ryan, do you think that's just being done just so they can get Loeb in the Citroën?
I'm not sure they'd go to all that trouble. Sorry for my opinion, to not agree with what you're saying there. But I think the joining of all the companies is what allowed it to happen, isn't it? But it's you know, whether they did it all to get Loeb in the car seems a bit extreme to me. But I'm sure you're just being a bit facetious there.
No, I'm not, genuinely, because, you know, Citroën obviously is the more aggressive brand now with regards to, you know, their program. They've already documented that they're going to be producing a new R5 car. You know, they've very much obviously stayed away from the R2 categories and things like that, and you know, that's been very much, you know, the R2 car at the moment in many people's eyes is either the Peugeot or the Opel perhaps, but the Peugeot seems to be the weapon of choice of a lot of people right now. So I just wonder whether, you know, rather than fight one another and trying to build, you know, a Peugeot R5 and a Citroën R5 again, all this kind of, you know, under one banner is perhaps, you know, a way of getting the organisations, you know, not fight one another, but to be working together for probably the first time ever. Because of course we did have that situation way back when we had both Peugeot and Citroën in the WRC, which when we look back was actually great, but, you know, it must have been the politics that must have been going on at that time must have been nuts.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, if you look at the R5 cars that they have built, the DS3 and the 208, I think, putting it politely, they weren't the best R5 cars produced. So maybe if they pool their resources, you know, they'll be able to come up with something, you know, a bit more competitive towards the Skoda. And there's that distant cloud, isn't there? The ominous sort of cloud on the horizon that is the Polo R5 as well, which, you know, you've got to think is going to be, you know, there or thereabouts when that arrives, because not only have they got Skoda, who currently have the best R5 car, I think is most people's shared opinion, they also had the best 2016 WRC car and have the best sort of the best track record in the past few years, don't they? So that's a bit of a worry. So Citroën and Peugeot have got to pull their resources and pull something together to challenge that.
And what was interesting, of course, the other week we had Adam Taylor on, who works kind of freelance. He works with a lot of private teams running R5s. Of course, he engineers Frederick's car alongside Martin Wilkinson at CA Sport, CA1 Sport rather. But I know he works with other teams across Europe in WRC2 and also in ERC. And he was saying that Skoda haven't played any jokers yet, which, yeah, I found was amazing. You know, you think about where we're up to with jokers with other manufacturers, you think, wow, they've still got, you know, another good few pops at getting this R5 car right. That clearly is, you know, it's a dominating R5 car at the moment. Mm-hmm.
Think about how long they took to develop that car, though, and how much work they actually put into making sure that car was the absolute product that they wanted before they homologated it. It was a lot longer than M Sport took to put the Fiesta through, and, you know, that's not a reflection on M Sport in any way. It's just how Skoda chose to do things, and, you know, the reflection there is that they're happy with their car, and they don't seem to want to make any changes to it. And, like, you know, there's things like flappy paddles that have been sort of authorized now by the FIA and stuff like that the R5 guys can have. I know M Sport are developing one. So I don't know if Skoda will go down that route with maybe sort of maybe not engineering changes, but we'll make you know, a few changes to the car in terms of things like that. But to be honest, I think the flappy paddle probably won't be a homologation joker. I think that'll be just be a change. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see. You know, Skoda have saved all them all those tokens, and they'll be needed them to keep with the Polo. I think that's my opinion.
I think the other thing is, Jack, that we've perhaps been missed here, is that Skoda Motorsport is a work program.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's it. It's a proper work program. That's the difference between the Fiesta and the Skoda. Of course, M Sport, we're back in those realms, aren't we? You know, M Sport is a privately funded team, and Skoda is a work team. And again, you know, that's the difference. And that's not a slant on anybody, but that is the difference. Clearly, is what's going on. You know, Skoda can afford to buy that time almost, because it's a works. It's not necessarily, sure, there's commercial elements to it, but it's actually a works program. But anyway, I want to push on a little bit, Jack, and I want to get to just one man I want to kind of tip our hat to a little bit, and I've mentioned them loads of times, and we probably should get them on. But you guys have run an article in your sister publication this week with regards to John Armstrong, who is a very, very quick young man who I've belted on about numerous times whenever Tarmac Rally in Ireland and things like that come up. But you guys and one of your colleagues at Autosports done a great feature with him this week.
Yeah. The piece in MN is more about him getting a pre-event test for Germany, which is obviously great to hear. He's got a prize drive thanks to winning the most points over two rounds of the Drive DMAC Trophy last year. So he'll be driving Fiesta R5 backed by DMAC on Rally Germany. He was a bit concerned he wasn't going to get a test in beforehand, so did a pre-event raffle and managed to raise over £5,000 so he could go and have a test in the car before the event. So I know he was keen to thank all his, you know, supporters and people who bought the raffles and stuff like that. And I spoke to him last week. He was very sort of grateful for those people, and you know, the fact that he gets a proper test now, because he's never driven an R5 car in competition. So this will be his first time. So you know, that test was really important to him. The piece in Autosport is more about his simulator setup that he's got, and he's developed like hydraulics for the brake and things like that to make it more. Or is it the clutch? I'm not sure. It's one of the two to make it more realistic.
I think it's the handbrake.
Hydraulic handbrake?
This is something which is a flaw in the one that I've put together, to be honest with you. And I spoke to the guys at Codemasters about it. John's setup actually came into the whole conversation, is the fact that how far he's developed this system and having a proper, you know, feeling handbrake and stuff like that. And it, you know, there's some images I think on Autosport as well where you can actually see it, and it's, you know, it's beyond the game, I think is probably the best way of putting it, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a proper simulator setup. You know, it's a multi-million pound industry, in especially for the circuit races now, that, you know, pounding around tracks and making sure you learn it and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, John's obviously, you know, not a scale, but it's developing something that can help him in the future in terms of practicing car control, things like that. So, you know, good luck to him.
Absolutely, absolutely. Listen, one thing I wanted to just tip our hats to a little bit. It was the last round of ERC at the weekend. We were hoping to have somebody on, but didn't quite work out with schedules and things like that.
You don't need anyone on when you've got me.
I know, well, that's where I was about to go, but we've got, you know, we have the, while we have the physical kind of driver Bible and, you know, with Ryan Champion, who can talk to us about setups and dips and things like that. When it comes to news, that's why we have Jack Bengen. So Jack Bengen, just talk us through. I'm gonna go for it, Jack. I'm gonna go for the last round, which was Rezis Zoff, which is in, yeah. Okay, go on.
Rally,
you go then.
Rally Zhezhov, I think.
There you go.
It's as close as I can get. I don't know. Yeah. We'll have to get someone on to talk about that. Big story from Zhezhov was not Brian Bouffier winning the event, which he did by 38 seconds.
In a different car again. He's back in a Fiesta.
Yeah. The Eat Pretty was a one-off. That was the car Freddie Loikes drove the year before, and it is Bernard Munster who he drove that car for. But his whole ERC campaign is centered around this Fiesta, which was an absolute, what word can I use to describe it nicely, and not swear, a swine on the Canary Islands because of an unidentified brake problem that they couldn't work out. But clearly it's working quite well now, because he's won the event by half a minute. Kajetan Kajetanovic finished second, so he's retaken his championship lead and has won the last two championships, so he'll be the first person to win three straight ERC championships if my history is any good. And Marianne Griebel was on the podium last year's European Junior Champion, and he is doing quite well in the Under 28 Junior Championship. And the prize for that this year is one drive in a European WRC event in a 2016 WRC car. So that's quite a nice big prize for whoever wins that. Wow. So good points for Griebel. And then in the junior class, Jari Huttunen, who won WRC 2, we talked about earlier, in Finland, won the junior class. Chris Ingram, friend of the show, usually comes on and gives us a good rundown of what he's been up to. Had a few problems on the event with the car cutting out and lost quite a lot of them. So not the best event for him, and he only took 7 points, I think, made a note of it somewhere. But he's still leading championship over his Opel teammate, Huttunen. So although not the ideal weekend for Chris, the first two events he's had of the year where he's been very strong, that's been really helpful for him and has helped him keep his championship lead. But the big story of the event for me was Alexei Lukyanuk, who you like to pronounce, don't you, Tony? You like his name?
I do, Alexei Lukyanuk. There you go, I'm all right with that. I'm comfortable with that.
No, I was just giving you an opportunity to demonstrate how much you've progressed over these years with your pronunciation of Lukyanuk.
Thanks.
That sounded really condescending, didn't it? Sorry, I didn't mean it.
It did, mate. Yeah, it did. But I'll let it slide.
Apologies.
I'll let it slide this week.
So, Alexei Lukyanuk had a crash earlier this year in May, and it was a testing crash. It was a very big crash, and he spent a month in hospital. The co-driver of the other car unfortunately lost his life in the crash, so it was a properly, you know, really bad crash. And Alexei had a lot of broken bones. He had broken bones in his feet. He had a broken vertebrae, his heel bone, all sorts of breakages and lots of bruising, and was very, very ill for a while. Spent a month in hospital and then decided it'd be a clever idea to try and get back to rallying within a month. So he came back to the event, and I spoke to him the week before actually on the phone, and he just had a pre-event test, and his pre-event test, he didn't go over 70 kilometers an hour, Tony. That was as fast as he went on the pre-event test.
Is that due to his injuries?
Yeah,
obviously
he was getting comfortable in the car. He was getting his seat in position sorted. He couldn't wear his race boots properly. He had to sort of amend a repair to his race boot in order to get it on properly, and he's still got open wounds in the car. This is how hurt this guy is. And he rocks up in Zhezhov and wins the first stage ahead of Mads Osberg, Brian Buffier, Kajetan Kajetanovic, even Marianne Griebel, all these guys. He won the first stage, and yes, sadly he rolled horrifically on the second stage and destroyed the car, but the good news is it looks like he's going to be okay for Baron, which is the next round of the ERC. And it'll be, you know, I just think it was, although he did roll and that is terrible, it was such a, you know, the elation of him winning the first stage in such a state. You know, the guy hadn't driven over 70 kilometres since the Canary Islands rally that he won back in May. And yeah, just an absolutely phenomenal sort of one of those performances that really makes your hair on your neck stand up and really sort of really commend these guys and their motivation to get back to getting in a rally car whenever they're unable to not compete. But yeah, fantastic. And Mads Osberg, the other person we should mention, there's a very funny video of him on Twitter, on the ERC's Twitter feed, if you want to go and have a watch of it. But he lost his power steering, and
he lost his brakes as well, didn't he, at the beginning? Or was he on two-wheel drive or something like that? I think it was two-wheel drive early on the event.
That was the pre-event test where he broke a drive shaft and was only had two-wheel drive for that. Then he had brake issues, then his power steering went, and there's a video of him and new co-driver Patrick Barth, who was sitting in with Mads for the first time. And there's a video of Mads sort of breathing very heavily and sort of not screaming but kind of yelping and stuff like that. The you can see the weight of the steering actually when he's turning. So go and check that out. But yeah, that's a short summary of Rally Zhezhov.
Well, there you go. Have you got your any other business for this week, Jack?
Yes, I have. Okay,
well, the fact that you were so kind of, yes, I've got it, means you're going to go first.
Oh, well, thanks for that brilliant opportunity. I very much appreciate it. I've wanted to raise sort of listeners' awareness, especially in the UK, to a consultation that's currently going on about closed roads in Wales. So if you've listened to the podcast sort of every week or a lot, you'll know I talk about closed roads a lot because I'm sad like that. But I would like to see closed road rallying sort of making a comeback. And although we've talked about lots of different issues like insurance and stuff that could be a barrier to it, it would be nice to have the Jim Clark back and some of the other, you know, sort of big closed road events running again in England. So the process was passed a bit earlier this year where you no longer need to enact a law to have a closed road event. It's now the decision of the MSA. and the local council to decide whether an event gets a closed road permit. MSA being the what? Come on, tell me what the MSA is, Tony. It's get my hand. I can't explain it. The governing body of motorsport in the UK. Governing body, that's what I was looking for. So they now have the opportunity to give out closed road permits. But that wasn't, because of how the government is devolved in the UK, that wasn't passed in Wales. So at the minute, we can't have closed road events in Wales, or we can, but you would have to pass a law which would cost millions of pounds and take lots of time. And by the time you'd done it all, you'd have to redo it again anyway, because you'd have to, it takes so long to do that the event would be coming up, and then you would have to plan for the year after. So there's a consultation going on. You can have a look at it on the MSA website, and it's just a couple of quick questions which basically asks things like, would you like to see a closed road rally in Wales, etc., etc. So go and have a look at that on the MSA website, fill it in, see what you think. If like me, you think there should be closed road rally in Wales, and you know, this affects everything from Rally GB, you know, the ability to use closed roads in spectator stages or between stages to make stages longer, all the way down to local events that want to connect two stages together so that you can use less volunteers, or maybe make a stage longer than previously. All these things that can't really be done at the minute, but if this consultation goes through and, you know, is accepted, then we'll be able to have those things. So I think it's very important. I'd like to see people go and take a look at that.
There you go. My only other business this week, I believe it or not, Jack, I'm going to go where you would normally take us. Muckster is normally like nails down a blackboard to me. But I just want to mention, and everyone will know about it anyway, because I credit our listeners basically not only as fans of rally, but they're normally fans of all forms of motorsport as well. I just wanted to just kind of almost orderly give a round of applause, or verbally rather give a round of applause to Robert Kubica. And it was fantastic to see just how quick he was in practice the other week. And I think he was fourth fastest on day's practice, and in an F1 car again. Now, I know I mentioned an F1, and I know I normally mock Jack for it, but it's fair to say, you know, he's been through the mill a little bit, and I hope he does find a way and finds a happy home in some form of motorsport sooner rather than later, because I think he was a great advert for rallying when he was with us, and I think he came into it, you know, and you know, whether he comes back and does any more, I really don't know, with commercial opportunities perhaps maybe restrict that now, but I think he came in to obviously try and be, you know, at the top of WRC. It looks like there may be a route back to F1 or maybe GT racing or something along those lines, and yeah, I just think it was great that he went out and basically showed himself to still be a more than capable driver with all things that's considered that he's been
through. I think he's done more than that. I think he's made himself a justifiable candidate for a Formula One team, and the comments that are coming out of the paddock after the test prove that. You know, he is being considered. Yes, his injuries are going to hamper him quite a bit, but not to go further into talking about circuit racing, but Hungary is one of the most physical circuits to drive these new 2017 cars on, and he's, you know, he's done a pretty good job of doing 142 laps there, which wasn't far off the you know, the maximum number of laps completed. So yeah, I agree with what you said, and definitely I think he's made himself a, you know, a real candidate for a Formula One drive, so hopefully he doesn't have to worry about GTs or anything like that. And although it would be nice to see him back in rallying, I think F1's definitely a valid option for him.
I hope so. Folks, that's the end of the newsy section. Obviously, it's been just being me and Jack this week, but me and Jack will be back after this break talking to Elvin Evans.
This is Absolute Rally, Case Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good news agents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Case Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally, and welcome back to a guest we had on, God, the last time I think we had Elvin on, I think, was when we were called another name. That's how long ago it was. But anyway, Elvin Evans, welcome to Absolute Rally.
Cheers, thank you.
It's great to have you on. As I say, we've had both your co-drivers on over the last couple of years, so it's nice to finally get you on. Now, Jack's with me to do this piece, and Jack's, as ever, has got loads of things he wants to ask you, so I'm going to hand you over to Jack for the time being. So you knock yourself out, Jack.
Don't worry, Elvin. I'm not gonna give you any trouble.
No big headlines in MN next week.
No, that's it. No. You've already had that one last week. I think it'd be nice just to go back to Finland briefly, because we've not spoke about it too much on Absolute Rally in the sort of aftermath of everything. But sum up the event from your point of view, because I mean it was by the end it was brilliant, wasn't it? Fantastic podium. But Friday night must have been quite difficult for you, and a bit of a turnaround over the course of the weekend for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, things didn't start off too well. I mean, I struggled, to be fair, in shakedown from the beginning. Struggling to get a great feeling in the car. Obviously, didn't test. We really struggled in shakedown, and that sort of feeling continued into the first loop. And Finland this year was quite unique with, the way that they set out the stages. Normally, we do three stages back to service and three stages again. But this year, there was a repeat loop before we went back to service. So I think it was 7 or 8 stages that we did. And obviously, we had to live with, the issues we were having. And, to be fair, we went back to service. We made some changes and we did manage to improve. But like we saw in Poland, when the rain came, it didn't really suit the package. The DMAC tyre this year has been sort of catered more for, as an all-round tyre, rather than, we saw fantastic performances from Oit on GB at the end of last year. That was a specific Rally GB tyre. What we brought this year was something that was more suited for the whole championship. And we may have gone a little bit too much the other way. And it means that when it rains, basically, we're outside of our optimum window. And that's what happened on Friday afternoon. And yeah, it left us, like you say, on Friday afternoon in a not great position. I mean, we were basically fighting at the very lower end of the top 10 and looking for answers, really. But at least we found some confidence in what the car was doing on Friday afternoon. So we knew then we had the confidence to go into Saturday looking a bit better, and it sort of got better and better from there, really, towards the end.
You've mentioned how sort of tough that Friday was, but, like you also mentioned a little bit earlier on, without a test, that must have made things a lot more difficult. And I think because of the result, I think that kind of got forgotten in the post-event sort of talk about the event, the fact that you didn't get the pre-event test after Sebastian crashed the car. So just how important is that pre-event test for setting up for Finland, and, how much effect did that have in terms of you chasing the car on Friday? Was there any sort of a lack of setup maybe that you could have done in the pre-event test or anything like that that affected you?
I mean, you would like to think that you would have been able to pick that up in the test, but, you never know what condition you may have had in the test and whether you would have gone in the right or wrong direction or what have you. So, for sure it didn't work out this time. And you'd like to think that, the minor changes that we did do, although they weren't that big, it made a big difference to the way the car behaved and our confidence. And, we were struggling with understeer, which in Finland, when you want to make sure you get the lines 100% right, it was a critical part of having confidence, basically, to go quickly.
Elvin, if I can just ask you, we've known each other kind of off and on for a long time. I remember you when you were starting off, very much in the micro and everything else and kind of finding your feet and stuff like that. And I've said this on our podcast a few times and we've got a lot of mutual friends and stuff like that. And I've said this. I see a very different Elvin Evans this year. And I don't know whether this is just the fact that I've seen you kind of grown up, and now you're obviously a grown up and you're a grown man and everything else. And I remember you from when you were in your younger years, or whether what happened to you last year has kind of galvanized you and brought you onto where you are today, where you can go out and you can grind out a day one that perhaps hasn't gone your way and then get to the end of a WRC event and be on a podium, not just on a podium, but kind of knocking on the door. What is it? Did last year galvanize you, or has this just been a natural progression of you growing up?
Obviously, a lot of stuff went on, and I think, as time goes by, you learn a lot, and maybe the biggest learning year was not so much last year, but maybe 2015, and what come as a consequence of 2015. I think genuinely from a driving perspective, and you know, purely if you look on the driving side, I don't think last year did that much favours for me. But actually, in terms of maybe the whole package to this day, obviously everything has helped. So you know, it's interesting, and obviously we're happier with how things are progressing now, but. Naturally, you always want more, and you know, some events have been frustrating, but you know, you sort of learn to have to fight it out, you know.
Yeah, would you put that down as a masterstroke by the boss, or a happy coincidence?
With reference to
where you are now, obviously, I suppose in kind of, if I can use a football analogy, you know, players tend to get, you know, maybe left out for a couple of matches or whatever, to kind of, you know, kind of give them that almost kick up the backside. Do you feel that's kind of what happened last year? Do you think that's what it was, or do you just think it was circumstance?
I think there was a lot of things going on for sure. It was a kick up the backside, but, not maybe in the way that people necessarily perceive to have a kick in the backside. You know, I think the perception from the outside was maybe I'd gone maybe not to try or not that fussed in 2015, when in actual fact it was completely the opposite. Probably trying too hard most of the time and not taking enough time to maybe break away from rolling. You know, I was living up in Emsport full time and living and breathing and doing nothing else basically, and I think you know, without realizing it, I was slowly wearing myself out, and you know, I still work exceptionally hard at it now, but you know, you have to have a balance, and I think that's working better for me this year.
I was just going to say, it's an interesting one, isn't it? You know, I know a lot of professional sportsmen, you know, not necessarily just in motorsport, you know, footballers and things like that. And, you know, they have an escape. Did you find an escape? Have you got something now? You know, is it golf? Is it something like that? What, have you managed to kind of give yourself that breathing space?
To be honest, I don't have, you know, sort of massive hobbies outside of rallying, but you know, obviously there's the family business is there, and I spent quite a lot more time at the family business last year, although time is quite short now, and obviously I'm not really spending hardly any time there now again. But that was something, you know, that I could sort of spend a bit of my time on. You know, I'm not one for kicking around doing nothing. So, you know, that was nice to get a bit more involved back there last year. But now, you know, just, you know, yeah, just finding odd things. You know, I built a house at the back end last year, so there's always, you know, jobs around the house and that sort of stuff to do. So it's good sometimes just to break away. It doesn't matter what it is, just that you, you know, forget about the video work and that sort of stuff just for maybe a couple of days here and there.
Yeah, no, I can relate to the housework. I'm still 12 months into one at the moment, so I can, trust me, I can relate to that. But I was thinking about this only the other day. As I say, I've kind of watched you growing up and stuff like that, and I've watched you grow through rallying and everything else. And I don't think there's anybody else, and I spoke to Craig Breen about this a couple of years ago, and he was kind of the nearest person I got to, but I think you've surpassed that now. You've drove every version of the Fiesta rally car from R1, R2, all the way through. And I don't think there's anybody else that could possibly say that they've done probably that many clicks in a Fiesta rally car of various guises.
No, there's been a few, to be fair. You know, all the way through from the ST, where really all the one make championships have started for me. And I had a short stint in an R1, but I won't talk too much about that because I didn't end too well. yeah, obviously did a lot in the R2 then. The only one I think I probably missed out on was the Super 2000. I never really did anything much in a Super 2, but it was just being phased out when I was you know, coming into that sort of car. But yeah, pretty much everything else I think we've more or less covered, yeah.
I was just going to say, I think you've probably ticked it. I can't imagine you not driving something with a Ford badge, and I'm not going to take you down that road, don't worry. And I know I seen the headlines last week and everything else, don't worry, we're not going there. But the only other car I can remember you driving was your very first rally car, which was a Nissan Micra, and we're allowed to mention them, aren't we?
Yes,
Yeah, we're all right with that. We're all right with that. We're all right with that. But sorry, Jack, you were just about to say something then, mate.
No. Well, you were talking a lot about Elvin getting back into the WRC, and I just think it was convenient that he spent a year with me before he went back into the WRC. I think that's really convenient that you got, you know, a good year in the WRC with me, and then suddenly you're back in the WRC. It just seems a bit convenient, that's all.
It was all basically pressure to get away from you, Jack.
Do you know what? You're not the first person to say that, and you definitely won't be the last, Elvin, I'll tell you that much. But anyway, I'm gonna ask you the difficult question that everyone wants to know the answer to, especially our listeners, and that's, when are you going to win an event? Because everyone's seen you get so close, and I'm sure you, of all people, want to make that sort of extra step. But, you know, speaking a bit more sort of maybe a little bit more analytical about it, where do you think your kind of best chances come for the rest of the year, and have you still got that belief and that hunger to go and get that event win?
Yeah, for sure. The hunger is definitely there. Okay, we weren't really close to winning much in Finland. You know, the Toyotas was really strong, but you know, Argentina was obviously really close. And there's been a lot of, you know, difficult events where we haven't really been in a position to challenge for a win this year. But I think, you know, hopefully there will be an opportunity to try and compete for a win before the end of the year. You know, we're working with DMAC on new tyres all the time, and, you know, we just have to try and, you know, get the conditions right and everything go your way. I mean, for, you know, winning a WRC rally now, there's so many guys in very good cars. You know, everything has to be right. You have to drive the best you can. You know, you have to maybe have a bit of luck, everything go your way, and maybe then you can win one. So it's not just down to one thing. You know, there's a lot of variables, and yeah, we hope that, you know, that chance may come before the end of the year.
I saw your pre-event test was taking place sort of earlier, a little bit earlier this week. So how did that go for Rally Germany? Are you sort of confident, looking forward to that one? And how was everything feeling towards that event?
Yeah, I mean, everything seemed to work pretty well on the test. To be honest, there were some good improvements that we were able to make from Corsica, which was the last time we were out on tarmac. We won't really know. We have a new tyre coming for Germany, and, you know, until you get it in competition and go up against the other guys, it's really difficult to know where we're going to be. You know, we have really no reference. So, yeah, we hope that, you know, at least we can move in the right direction on tarmac from where we were in Corsica. And I'm certainly hopeful that it'll be a lot better than it was in Corsica this weekend in Germany.
I saw some brilliant stuff on social media about, because you were driving the car with Red Bull sort of livery on, weren't you? And some wild tweets going around saying that you were stealing Ogier's seat and all this kind of stuff. And it was completely wild on social media. But it must be, you know, it's where you wanted to be. That, you know, we talked a lot about that year ago, haven't it? But it's where you wanted to be back in the WRC. And, you know, we also joked about the headlines last week, but, you know, it looks like you're there to stay, and you must feel like you're doing the job that, you know, sort of deserves to keep you there. And I guess the job that you always knew you could do. You just needed the, you know, the chance and the sort of equipment to do it as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you always, like I said earlier, you always want more. You know, there's a lot of holes that you can pick in how things have gone this year. You know, it's not always been easy, but you know, there's been some good events and some good performances along the way as well. But, you know, I know myself that one or two good performances in a year is not enough to guarantee a place. You know, you have to be there every weekend doing the absolute best job you can, and have to be performing near the top every time, you know, to have a safe seat and be there all the time. And definitely that's what we're aiming towards.
Elvin, do you feel we're on the cusp of change in WRC? And what I ask, the reason why I asked that, obviously, you know, you looked at the podium, obviously, you know, the Escapeca and there was yourself. You know, are we going through a change in the guard? We know probably Seb's going to be around for another few years, but, you know, it wouldn't be surprised if he followed in the footsteps of another Frenchman who ironically has been in a world card over this past week. Do you feel we're kind of working towards the changing of a guard a little bit?
I think there's always, you know, evolution. There's new guys coming in, and, you know, some guys maybe, you know, hanging up the helmet. But I really don't know, is the honest answer. There's definitely some quick guys coming up now, you know, Sunninen and, you know, Esapak has been doing a really good job since he's been there in Toyota. So there's definitely plenty of guys waiting in the wings to take any opportunity that's available. And, Yeah, for sure. I'm sure we're going to see quite a few new names winning rallies pretty soon.
Now, I've got to ask you, I know Jack said it before, but obviously we've come close to a win. GB's got to be the one, hasn't it? That's the one we've got to aim for.
We definitely got to aim for it. let's wait and see. I mean, we weren't there last year, and that was painful, to be honest. Probably one of the most... the most painful thing definitely about the second half of the year was not being in GB. So we're definitely looking forward to this year's event, you know, and you know, it looks another cracker base in the itinerary, so definitely be giving it a good go to do all we can. The rest we have to wait and see how it plays out.
Happy days. Listen, mate, we will be rooting for you, and we will be there in one guise or another. But listen, thank you for your time. We'll let you get back to building, laying floors, or selling somebody a car. Whatever it is you're doing this afternoon to relax.
Well, I'm actually doing video work for Germany this afternoon, so there's no break this afternoon. So yeah.
Fair dues. Listen, mate, thank you so much for joining us. Can we bring you back again soon?
Yeah, of course you can. Yeah, no problem at all.
Happy days. Listen, folks, that was Elvin Evans. And Elvin, you are embracing social media more and more now, aren't you? I'm sure everybody's already on it, but your Twitter feed is?
At Elvin Evans, quite simple. But yeah, I'm not a massive social media person, but I do try and put the odd thing out there. I'm a sort of once a week type person, not a once an hour person, you know.
I'll be honest with you, I like that more than... Because when you say something, it matters.
Well, maybe.
Listen, Elvin, thank you so much for joining us at Absolute Rally this week, and we'll catch up with you again soon.
Cheers, thank you.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Click motorsportauctions.com. Now, one of the world's leading motorsport online classified adverts and auction sites. It's easy to use, providing listing platforms that enable you to sell race and rally cars, surplus parts, transporters, clothing, workshop and pit equipment. We specialise in cataloguing, listing and selling large quantities of motorsport-related surplus and obsolete stock. Click motorsportauctions.com. This is Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. It was great to have Elvin on, but we've got another guest. We've got another guest who's travelling the world these days. And last time we had him on, it was on the... We did a first. We had the driver and co-driver on the same programme. We didn't get Travis this week because we couldn't have Travis and two co-drivers. And I'll explain why I made that comment in a second. But welcome back to Absolute Rally, Robbie Durant.
Hello there. How are you doing, Tony? Nice to hear from you.
We're really good, and Jack's is still with us. He's with us for the entire programme. But we wanted to get you on. Now, I know it was a couple of weeks ago now. For our listeners in America, which obviously we've got quite a few, they know that there was a unique thing that happened on a rally. I'm going to ask how you're feeling first and foremost.
Certainly was unique. A couple of weeks on, I'm a lot better, thank you. We did have... a very heavy landing, which I knew not much about until we landed. It felt like there was some damage done somewhere in my back. You could tell instantly. Those that sit in the right or left seat, whichever can tell when you've had one that's over and above the norm. Luckily, fast forward a couple of weeks, it was muscle and ligament damage. I say only, it was still quite severe, but it wasn't any fractured or broken bones. So thankfully, I'm on the mend. I've got 10 days or so to be fully fit again.
I was just about to say, for the folks who are not fully aware, Robbie was out on the New England Forest Rally, last round of the American Rally Association Championship, and sat alongside Travis. Now, Travis still won the event. Now, this is quite a unique thing, Rob. Did you actually get a winner's trophy? Did you get anything from this, or does it go to
Greg? We it was a very, very strange story, quite interesting, and I'll try and give you the complete but shortened version. So this impact we were 1 second down, I think it was, going into stage four, which was the final stage of the Friday night. On David, after three, we were either 1 second down or 1 second up. Either way, it was very, very close. We were 10 tenths and about 3 miles from the end of the last stage, which was 15 or 16 miles, I think. The longest stage of the rally, actually. We had this big compression, and it was more rather than the car going over a jump and landing, which you see a lot, certainly from Finland recently, but other rallies. This was more of a dip where the road dropped away, and then as the road came back up, we kind of cleared the dip and landed on the way up, which for anyone that rides dirt bikes or anything like that, of which Travis is obviously one, you know that that's pretty bad news. So anyway, we got to the end of the stage and got some medical help and made the decision then to head back to service. I kind of knew at that point it was going to be game over for me for the rally. We limped back to service. Luckily, the road section time was quite long, and got back and actually checked in on time, by which point we'd had some paramedics and ambulances and staff and stuff back at the control. And I was quite worried, actually, although I could have had some experience of back injuries before, as many people have, unfortunately, in our game. And I did. I did the obvious, you know, what can I move, what can't I move, what can I feel, what can't I feel. And the paramedics were great. They were confident I wasn't broken or fractured. And I was out the car at that point, but only just on my feet and knowing I wasn't going to go any further forward. So this being one of the sort of deciding rallies, really, Travis had to win the rally to keep give himself a shot or give us a shot of winning the championship. So what do you do? He was perfectly fine. The car was damaged but repairable after the landing, and we were checked into service only he was a co-driver down. So what's the team to do at this point? It was quite a strange situation whereby we actually applied to the stewards to have a change of co-driver in the car, and they basically came back and said as long as there are no other teams in the event that object, then you can do it if you can find someone, this being 9 o'clock on a Friday night used to be running again on the Saturday. Fortunately, Greg Dorman, who was actually, he's on the team, he's one of the media guys on the Subaru Rally Team USA, has done a reasonable amount of co-driving at a reasonably high level in the States. And he was there. He was due to be, I think, kayaking or something the following day with his wife, a nice, calm, steady day. Certainly not there to be in the car at the last minute, but he was there. Travis got in touch with him. We asked him. And him, or I think maybe his wife or whatever, one of the two of them, they came up with the decision that they would put him in the car. Nobody objected. And that was set. So the story goes from there, really.
Oh, Robbie, it's just an absolutely fantastic story, isn't it? I mean, not so good in the fact that you're injured, but just such a, you know, such a, an odd story that this happened to you. But what can co-drivers do to kind of brace themselves in the car and things like that? Because obviously, you know, this is not an avoidable incident because you would have avoided it. But what kind of things can co-drivers do to kind of make themselves safer in the car like that? Because I think it's just fascinating. It's really interesting to know what you can do. Because I guess maybe one of the problems is you're looking at the notes and not at the road, so you're not necessarily ready for exactly what's to come, are you? Obviously, you're reading the notes, so you know if there's a jump, but you're not actually looking. So does that play a part in it, or how is it kind of being in the car?
I think it does. I think you're right. Historically, I remember when we were back with the MSA Rally Academy and Rally Elite, you know, probably 10 years ago now, and speaking with Robert Reed and some of the more experienced co-drivers at the time, and I know there was a big issue or bigger issue perhaps with back injuries historically. I think as harnesses and safety equipment with the hands and the Simpson systems and seat design and suspension design has moved forwards, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe we're seeing less of it than we used to, which is great. Quite what will happen to any of us for a few years down the line is yet to be seen. It sounds to me like it's becoming less of a problem. However, as with anything safety, the it marches on and the improvements must continue. And I mean, I've been using a hand device ever since they were very first conceived, really, back in 2006 or 5, and I think they were mandatory, certainly in America. I was doing some rallies out there then around that time, which kind of made it part of my kit at that point, and then they became mandatory in other countries a little bit later. But I think it is very difficult. As you say, you don't see the road necessarily. You can call the jumps as they are in the notes, and you've done the recce and what have you, but anything that drops away from you, or any dips or drop-offs that aren't necessarily in the notes, your equipment's so high and the cars are so good, you can take those at very, very high speed. I mean, this was top of sixth gear, very narrow road, downhill. And even Travis said, he said as soon as he knew the road dropped away, he could tell it was going to be a hard landing. But of course, by that point, you know, you're into it and there's nothing you can do. A lot of people have said to me, especially off the back of motocross injuries, what about, braces and core protectors and stuff like some of the bike guys use, and that might be something I look at and maybe talk to some other co-drivers as well about that. But it is very difficult. Vertical impacts as well as side impacts are really the two that we want to avoid as much as we can.
Absolutely. And what did you do on the Saturday while the competition was going on? Were you kind of being seen to, or were you in the service area kind of watching what was going on, or what was happening?
It was a very, very strange situation. It's the first rally after, I don't know, 200 or 300 I've ever retired from midway due to injury or illness. And I think it might even have been Robert Reed said to me long time ago, he said, if you do enough rallies, you'll get all the outcomes. And sure enough, this is one I've never had before. So, no, I was in reasonably bad state, actually. Come Friday night, the adrenaline wears off, and I'd actually spent an hour or so in the sort of hotel with Greg going through. He's done rallies, so he knew you know, how to do a rally, and he knew how to do that rally. But he hadn't seen Travis's notes. He'd never seen my writing. So we spent an hour or so going through all that with me on various painkillers. But no, the next morning it took a long time to get going. The muscles were very, very stiff. They didn't want to move. Any flexibility or any, you know, I couldn't carry anything. I could barely walk. But I did get going, and I knew from previous injuries that sitting still is one of the worst things you can do if it's not broken. So I got up and about. I did go into service park at lunchtime and catch up with the guys and spoke to some of the media guys just to say, fill in the gaps and say what was happening. But it was very odd seeing it from the outside. But as you know, and I'm sure you'll continue with the story, but they actually were about to take the points for second, really. They had two stages to go, and it looked like they were, you know, 40 or 45 seconds down, which was a monumental effort at that point with a new co-driver. But they both ran into issues on the penultimate stage, and as it happened, David ripped a wheel off, and Travis, we think, probably hit the same rock, but actually didn't do quite as much damage. So ended up with a reasonable lead, not that they knew it at the time, going into the last stage. So they came out with a win, and I did actually manage to get up onto the podium and get sprayed with some champagne in normal team clothing, not a race suit, with two co-drivers and a driver on the podium. It was very, very strange.
But it all was not lost, because, of course, I then seen pictures of you the following day on a private jet going to a Nitro event.
Well, that is true. That is true. The plan was always, it was Travis's Nitro Circus, his hometown Nitro Circus show in Annapolis in Maryland. And the plan was always we would head down there. My other half, Millie, came out to the event, and I'm not sure if she was glad she did or not. But I think she was there and gave me some moral support when I was not feeling great. And the call was made that we'd stick with our plans, and I would take as many painkillers as I could manage, and we would continue with the weekend. And I was trying not to be on my feet for too long. But as with many muscle injuries, if you just leave them be, then their muscle seize up again. So, yeah, it was great fun to see him do what he does. You know, and to ringlead the circus was great fun on the Sunday.
Happy days. Right, next event, obviously you've got 10 days to get yourself fit. Just tell our listeners about the next event and where we are now championship wise.
Yeah, that's right. So this year, just to recap briefly, has been a bit of a handover year between the previous rally organisers, really, if you like, have run the series for the last 10 plus years, and then handed on into the American Rally Association, or was taken over, whichever way you look at it, for this year. So they've put a series together with a number of the events that we know, but it's a bit of a sort of handover interim series. So actually only 6 rallies, and the last one being in 2 weeks' time. So it's Ojibwe Forest Rally up in the north in Minnesota. One I've done, I actually did this one last year. It was the first rally with Travis. He's done it a few times, and I've done it a few times over the years. Tricky event, narrow, technical, fast, rocky, sandy surface. So not as hard-packed gravel as you might expect. It can be quite sort of off-road circuit-type surface. And it's all running daylight. Last few years, something's been in at nighttime, but this year it's all in daylight. So it's basically, it comes down to whoever wins the rally wins the championship. So it's going to be all to play for.
Wow. Listen, we're going to keep our eye on it. And whoever wins, because obviously I can't, I'm trying to do this as most unbiased as possible, because I'm kind of friends with both you and with Drewy and with David, more so the co-drivers, oddly enough, in this instance, though, because I class you both as mates. So may the best man win. And listen, I hope everything's fine for you with your back and everything else. And whatever happens, you'll come back and talk to us again soon, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course I will. Anytime. It's great to catch up and fill everyone in on what's been going on. I know the Subaru, the launch control series that Subaru do, the web series is fantastic. I get a lot of comments about that, people saying that's a great way of catching up with the events and what's going on. But yeah. No, for sure, we'll be giving it 10 tenths and trying our very hardest. And I know David and Craig will be probably preparing as we speak.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. So folks, do check out the launch control series if you've not already done it, and they've got a great app as well, by the way, the guys at Subaru America. That is this week's programme. Thank you so much to Elvin Evans. Thank you so much to Robbie Durant, of course, as well, who's just joined us. And we'll be back same time, same place, in your little podcast hole next week with both Ryan, Jack and myself.